Anita Bhagwandas, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm excellent and really good for seeing you, my friend. You look really well.
Thanks. I'm very tired because I've got one of my like remaining issues I need to fix is playing with my phone before bed. So yeah, that is this week's gonna nix that. So I've not had much sleep, but I am excited to be here and chat to you.
And you have some brilliant feel-good habits because you are perhaps one of my most prepared guests ever, because you actually sent me a voice note yesterday saying, this is what I'm thinking, is this okay, dude? Which I've never had before, which is amazing.
I think being that organized and prepared is actually the opposite of how I am, mm-hmm. which is funny, and I know we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, for me, if I am organized and prepared for something, then it takes away any anxiety around it because I sort of know what's going to happen and I feel mentally prepared. So yeah, did all my preparation yesterday.
It's so impressive. So listeners who will remember you from your previous appearance will know that you are a writer. We met on the beauty circuit way back in the day. Although you always tell me it's more recent, but I feel like I knew you from day dot, but you're like, no, Emma, it's like 10 years, not 20. But anyway, and you are currently in the process of becoming an author because you have a book coming out. When is it coming out, Anita?
Next May, so May 22. So a little while yet, I am in the process of writing it.
Not to put any pressure on, but it is available for pre-order. I think it is, isn't it?
Right? It is, yeah.
Okay. And maybe at the end of the show, you can give a little bit of a pricey about what it's about. But shall we go in straight to your first feel-good habit?
Yeah, absolutely. My first feel-good habit. So I guess before I talk about this habit, in order for things to make a little bit of sense and a bit of context, I have ADHD, and it's a fairly recent diagnosis for me as well. So I am very much still coming to terms with it, and you know what it means to me, because I think for everyone with ADHD, the symptoms, the sort of characteristics are very different for everyone. So it is, I guess, about working out your own ADHD, and I'm going through that process at the moment. So this is, you know, all very much work in progress. This is what's working for me now. But yeah, just I guess to talk about that very briefly, because it's not something I've really mentioned before. It's something I've kept quite private, because actually, if I'm totally honest, I've had a suspicion something wasn't quite right for a while, and I think a lot of people who know me would probably be like, oh, you're so, you know, disorganized or chaotic, but on the flip side of that, very creative, and you know, like these other things that often go alongside ADHD. But to cut a very long story short, I actually thought I had dementia for a really long time, and I'd sort of been stewing about it, and I sort of keep my feelings to myself anyway as a person. I'm just sort of like that. And then I do all these, like, I do a mad flurry of sort of Googling and, you know, can you get dementia in your mid-30s? And, you know, that sort of thing. And it wasn't until I sort of watched a few YouTube videos, saw a few things, read a few things, spoke to a few sort of medical experts in my family. And I was like, yeah, I definitely think this is what I've got. I actually watched, there was a TED talk I watched, and I nearly cried. Oh, I did cry, listening to it, because I was like, this is me. This is literally me. This is everything I felt growing up. You know, I underperformed at school and come from a very academic family. I felt stupid and lazy. If anyone asked me, and this might be quite a shock to people, I guess, you know me professionally and, you know, personally, the two things I've always felt are stupid and lazy. If I had to pick two words that really, like, got to my core, or very, like, oh, there's words that, you know, kind of, like, just really, really trigger you, those would be my two words. And then to find out that I had ADHD last year was really quite, yeah, it sort of made a lot of things make sense. It made a lot of my life made sense, and that was really, really joyful. But then on the flip side of that, I had a really, I think I'm still really going through it, but I had a real period of grief where I just felt so sad for my young self and all the things I'd experienced and all the things that come alongside ADHD, you know, things like low self-esteem and just feeling really outside and misunderstood and, you know, those sorts of things. So yeah, it's to cut a very long story short, it's been a definite journey. So yeah, my feel good habits are quite sort of specific, and you know, hopefully that will be helpful, because, you know, even if you don't have ADHD, I spend so much time looking at ways to sort of hack my own life to make it easier. That I do have a real, yeah, I've got loads of things that really work and I think are probably quite helpful. Sorry, that was such a monologue. I've stopped now.
No, I really appreciate it. And AB, I just think that's such a heavy thing to be carrying around silently, quietly, the fear of dementia. My heart breaks because I can imagine that constant niggle in the back of your mind, worrying, the relief of getting a diagnosis, but equally the challenges that then lay ahead on trying to understand it, because it isn't a cookie cutter diagnosis, is it? It's a very personal, individual, unique, it presents differently in everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many things that sort of layer on top of it. And, it's just so interesting looking back, because I can see all the places where it was really strongly at play and I just wish I'd known. But, you know, obviously you can't go back and all of that. But yeah, it's a very interesting, it's an interesting condition. It is, there's different levels of it. I'm obviously pretty highly functioning and in a lot of ways it sort of helped me and is a really big part of who I am and my success. But it's there's definitely parts of it that are still really hard.
Well, my two words for you are brilliant and... Well, brilliant. I was going to say brilliant and brilliant, but you are brilliant and you're also an incredible writer. And I was trying to think of a word that really covered that for me. But yeah, I would never associate you with stupid and lazy. So just know that, my friend.
Thanks, pal. Appreciate it.
Right. So shall we move into number one?
I mean, this is quite a typical ADHD thing, to be very distracted and go off on a tangent, which I am the queen of. Yes. You might have to keep me on track. My first one is outsourcing and delegating, which might seem like a curious feel-good habit. But I think it's really good, you know, whether you've got ADHD or not, you know, just to know your strengths and know, you know, what you can feasibly afford to outsource. So not everyone, you know, can afford to outsource everything in their lives. Otherwise, we probably would, you know, all outsource everything. I know I definitely would. But I know for me, if I take too much on, if I overschedule things, if I've got too much on my plate and I feel really overwhelmed very quickly, and then it means I don't do anything or I really stress and I really panic. So I guess for me, I do tend towards having a really strong perfectionistic sense. And a lot of people with ADHD do actually, but if I'm not able to do everything that I set on my to-do list or, you know, is on my plate, I feel it makes me feel like I've failed. So the way that I outsource things is, for me personally, I have a PT. So that is how I outsource fitness, because actually, you know, taking myself off to the gym, even before the pandemic, I found really hard the logistics of it. Even if, you know, I've actually got a gym in my building, I've got to be totally honest with you, so I've got no excuse. It's so bad. I didn't actually use that now, by the way. Yeah, it's just, for me, having someone to be accountable to is really important. It's not, you know, not everyone needs that, but for me, I need to have somebody check in and just be like, right, you know, are you on track to, I don't know, walk more this, you know, week, or like increase your steps, or, you know, whatever it is. And like, you know, taking the focus away from weight loss or anything like that, I think is really crucial. And for me, it actually is just about feeling stronger and building healthier habits. That's literally what I do with my personal trainer. I want to build healthier habits. So for me, having someone like that is really brilliant. So my PT is Luke Golden. So I will just want to shout him out because he's excellent and mega lols. And then I also have a sort of a freelance ad hoc virtual PA who I will send things to help me out as well, which is really great, because there might be things that I know that I can do, but actually finding the time to do them is just not going to happen. So actually taking that one thing off my to-do list, taking like away the control of it, because I'm quite a control freak over stuff as well, it's a good lesson for me. But it's good to hand that over if I can. I can't afford it all the time, but you know, when I can, that's really super helpful. And then I also have I've got an ADHD coach as well, you know, so that's, you know, somebody who knows more about ADHD than I do, particularly, you know, this being a fairly new diagnosis as well, having somebody who knows those things is super helpful to guide me through that. And yeah, I think, you know, there are so many people, there's, you know, an accountant or, you know, whatever it happens to be, or a cleaner, or, you know, whatever you happen to need, if you can afford to, and it doesn't have to be forever, but if there are periods where you need some help, I think outsource, get some help, delegate, which I know a lot of people have issues with, but I think sometimes we just need to do that. I think women in particular, we just think we need to do everything. We don't need to do everything. We're not proving anything to anyone, and it means that we end up being the bottom of our to-do list, and that's not okay. And that's something I really struggle with. Being able to self-care for myself is probably one of my biggest struggles. Even very basic things, I think people would probably be quite shocked to know, but even sort of remembering to, I don't know, eat breakfast or shower, or you know that is actually a very big part of ADHD, is, you know, being able to self-care, because I just can't remember to do it sometimes. So yeah, I think that's a very big important feel-good habit for me, is being able to outsource and delegate and get help when I need it.
You make a really good point about, if you're constantly taking on everything, then you end up becoming the bottom of the pile when it comes to the priority list. But also, you talked about personal trainers and cleaner and a virtual assistant. And these, as you exactly rightly say, they can seem like an extravagance, but actually the way that you've just described it, they're absolutely not an extravagance at all.
Yeah, if it makes your life better and easier and, you know, gives you time, because time is so valuable. I know people say this all the time and it's a bit cringe, but, you know, like, actually having time to do what you want to do is really, really valuable. You know, my mum always says this to me as well. She was like, you could spend 3 hours cleaning your flat in a, you know, not doing it very well, which is how I clean. Or you can outsource this to someone who is actually really good at it, and you're helping them as well, which is awesome. And, you know, you get that 3 hours then to go for a walk or see mates, or, you know, do something that you really want to do that really lights you up. And I think that's what you get back from outsourcing, is time. Mm. And I know that, you know, I know that is a money thing as well. So it's not always outsourcing it to other people. It might be outsourcing, I don't know, for example, can you set up a recurring Tesco delivery so that it's outsourced? You know, there is something, you don't have to worry about that, basically. You know, you just add what you need to your basket for the week or whatever. It's finding those, like, little ways to outsource something, maybe even to an app. There's an app that I use, actually, I'm trying at the moment, which I quite enjoy, and it's called Brilli, which sort of it almost, like, puts in your morning day-to-day routine. So, like, you can outsource things to apps as well. That was free. So it's not always about spending money. I think it is just getting that extra help.
Yep. I think you're 100% right. And I think as well, it makes me think of thinking that anybody who outsources or who has all of this help, in inverted commas, is somehow spoiled or lazy or princessy or precious. And the way that you're describing it, well, it's none of those things, is it? It's just a fundamental self-care. If you're not going to get enjoyment, or you know you're not very good about cleaning, or, you know, it doesn't spark joy, as you might say, but someone else will, and you can use that time, then actually it's just a game of organizational mental Tetris, isn't it? It's like, it makes sense to outsource that one.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely.
Cool. I like that one very much. Okay, so where are we for habit number two?
So habit number two. So this is in a sort of similar vein. This is probably my biggest thing I'm trying to, I guess, overcome, is planning and sort of, you know, tracking and that sort of thing. I guess it's very basic organization. It's something I really struggle with. I have always struggled with it. And I now know why, which is excellent. But I've just never been able to organize my time. I find it really hard. I underestimate how long things take, which is a big ADHD trait. I think for me, being able to work out systems that work has been really helpful, and planning and tracking for those things has been really great. So I guess some of the ways I do that, and, you know, this might not be for everyone, but one of the ways I do that is, so the app I mentioned, Brilli, is really good, and that's really good to help me sort of create a morning routine and help you stick to it. So basically, you put in your routine, whatever it, you know, it happens to be. Mine is sort of an hour, and within that hour I will do some journaling, I'll do like a very quick workout, I will do some meditation, and it just gives you the time slots for it, so within that hour. So it's sort of, I guess you can kind of track how long you're taking to do those things, but also you just know that that's, you've got to do that next thing, so you sort of just sit there and do it, which is great. I think it's actually aimed at kids, and it's getting kids to build routines. I think that's what the app is for, but it is a good one. I make reminders for myself on Canva of very beautiful, like, so I make them really, really pretty, and then I stick them up in places, because I've got very, I mean, Emma can see the back of my flat. It's a little bit messy at the moment because I'm doing a big life organized, but generally speaking, I've got a very, very strong aesthetic sense, and I like everything in my life to be really beautiful. So actually making these little reminders on Canva is really good. So I just sort of make them pretty and then I print them out, and it might be anything from, I've got one to remind me to take my vitamins, so I've got that stuck in my kitchen. I've got one in my bathroom to remind me to, I don't know, do whatever I need to do, remind me to floss or whatever it is, you know. I've got them like all over my flat, and they're good. And it is, you know, that is a form of outsourcing in itself. It's going, you know what, I can't remember all of this myself. I've got a million and one things on. I'm going to just plan this and put it up somewhere, and, you know, just have that organized. And then is what I will say is it's quite embarrassing when people come over, because I think they're a bit like, why have you got all these weird little things to remind you to do really basic things like brush your teeth? But ADHD life, sometimes I just need that, and yeah it is what it is. And then in terms of my sort of day-to-day stuff, so one thing that's really, really working for me in terms of planning is planning out my day on paper. So I use sort of just like the Apple calendar and stuff, and I put everything in there, etc. But I've got this really great planner, and it's called the High Performance Planner. And my ADHD coach actually told me about it, and it's really, really good. And it gives you loads of questions that essentially ask you what you want to achieve for the day. Because I do think quite often, and I know this is what I did before, I was a real slave to my email or my to-do list that actually wasn't helping me achieve my goals. And there was a real disconnect there. And I was like, I am not really, it didn't feel like I was moving forward with the things I wanted to achieve. I was just fighting fires constantly. So,
sorry to interrupt, but is that because as emails were coming in, you were just handling them then and there rather than, right?
Yeah. And, you know, if someone was like, I need you to do this, actually, you know, sometimes those things can wait, and we don't have to be beholden to people on email, etc. And yeah, it really helped me just, you know, pick the three, like it asks you to pick your top three priorities for the day, which is great, because I have a real tendency to think I can do 500 things in a day because I want to, and I'm a perfectionist and I want to do those things, but, you know, physically you just cannot. So it asks you to pick three things, which is really good for me because it means I don't go over that and I stick to that. And it asks you all the different things you might need in your day. You know, do I need to check in with someone? There's a really good question in there that really works for me as well, which is, it asks you if there's anything else that you want to do that you don't have time to do right now. And for me, that's such a big thing, because I'm trying to sort of organize different parts of my flat and my life, but I want to do it all at once because I want it done. Mm. Actually, to be able to go, right, do you know what? I can't organize my kitchen this week. I'm going to write that down, and my brain's acknowledged it, so that's cool, but I just can't do it. So it's good to kind of work out your priorities and what you want to achieve for each day. And you know, then at the end of the day, I do feel a lot better having used it, because I'm actually hitting targets, and everyone likes to tick a box, right? We all like to achieve stuff, so that's been really good for me. And I'm trying to think what else I use for planning. I also use Trello, which is free, which is good, and that's really good for me to brain dump ideas, because my mind is constant with ideas, and sometimes it is quite overwhelming, so I'm able to just brain dump them and just put them somewhere in categories.
Do you find in the pandemic, when we've been less social, that have constantly having ideas has changed in any way? And the reason I'm asking you is for this reason. So I, like you, live by myself, and I'm plodding along doing my work, being quite hard on myself, trying to be a bit of a perfectionist, trying to achieve everything, trying to get Arnold Schwarzenegger on the podcast. And when am I not? And I was on a call recently, and as soon as I said one idea, it was as if I was thinking in the back of my mind, oh, for goodness sake, Emma, shut up. Because I said, what about we do this? Or why didn't we do that? And then all of a sudden, just the connection and interaction with other people fired everything and it just started shooting out of my mouth on this Zoom call. Have you found that you have remained an idea factory, or do you think that actually you've noticed that when you're out and about and you're interacting with other people that you've had your creativity fired up?
I guess I think I've always got a constant stream of ideas. They sort of never end. Which is that people who've worked with me are like usually like, oh my God, like, because I am in brainstorms, I am like this, I've always got an idea for something. So yeah, it's I think during the pandemic, I don't know if it's made it any worse, but I do definitely relate to what you said about, you know, if you living on my own as well, when you speak to someone and you haven't like had enough interaction with people, all of this, you do, a lot comes out, and it's because we do need human connection. I think this year has taught us anything, is that we do need that. And that's, you know, that's not just people who live on their own. There is a lot of loneliness in, you know, other places. There, you know, people can be in couples or, you know, families and feel lonely and feel unseen and feel unheard, and within different communities. So yeah, I think we've really, I don't know, for me, I've really valued community. So yeah, that's yeah, interesting that you mentioned that.
But you're still a stone cold ideas machine.
Oh yeah, always got an idea, always got a hairbrain scam, not scam. An idea, a scam, a scheme, that's the word, scheme, not a scam.
I've never worked with you, but I feel like now I wish that we got to work on a project together just so I could see this in a in-person brainstorm. Anyway, let's move on to habit number three.
So I guess this is sort of almost part of outsourcing, is it's just having free time. I think is a really good feel-good habit. I think, you know, we do have a tendency to sort of, you know, structure everything in and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And I, you know, I do that. I do structure my free time a little bit, but just having space to enjoy the things that really light you up, I think is so crucial. And hopefully, you know, a lot of people have reconnected with that during the pandemic. You know, so many people are like writing and knitting and baking and, you know, whatever it happens to be. And often it is those really, really simple things that are super enjoyable that we just end up being distracted from. So for me, I really do schedule time to enjoy those things. So I guess one of them for me, and if you follow me on Instagram, it's a slight diversion from my sort of beauty journalism stuff, but I am really obsessed with history and very geeky about history. And actually, weirdly, I've got a real brain that sort of soaks up historical facts in quite a scary way. So history is I just love history, and it's a big part of my book as well, which is fun. So yeah, I watch a lot of historians talk about geeky historic things, and I do. So if you are interested in history in any way, there is a great website called Footprints of London that, well, this is just London history obviously, but they do virtual walking tours of London. And I've learned so much, and they're so fascinating, and they're so brilliant. And there's a really nice sense of community as well. And quite often, so for example, I did one about areas of London that were blitzed in the war. And then a lady came on who, you know, who was a child during that time and like talked about it. And like there were some really lovely, like priceless moments like that. And it's a nice sense of community. But I guess the wider issue is just making sure that you schedule in time to enjoy the stuff you love. And like, even if that, you know, isn't valuable to anyone else, or it is, you know, geeky stuff or whatever it happens to be, is it, I don't know, it might even just be.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
You know, watching Real Housewives, you know, which yeah, I'm a big fan of, and I know EG is as well. It might just be that, you know, it could be whatever it is, just scheduling the time to do stuff that you love. It's so important.
I totally agree. And actually, your tours of London sparked a memory for me, because you did, and these are, you do share them on your Instagram stories, and I go on these journeys with you. And you talked about Cock Lane, which was the lane in London, East London, that was where, was it, sex work was legal back
yeah,
in the
it was
day?
Yeah, it was the only street that sex work was legal, which is literally why it's called Cock Lane, which is really interesting. And because it's in Smithfield's Market in London, which is the area, sort of like, I guess, the meatpacking district is what you'd call it. A lot of people think it's where chickens were sold, and it's literally where, yeah.
It's Jack the Ripper's sort of turf as well, isn't it? That kind of area. But so I went on, you know that, listeners, London tourist buses. Obviously, you've got the red ones, but there's a black one that does, and I've forgotten what it's called, but it's essentially like a murder mystery tour of London, or a Halloween tour of London, a spooky tour.
Oh, the Metro bus. I've done that.
Yeah. And yeah. I took my friend Abby on it years and years and years ago. And the guy who did the tour bit, the guy at the front, was so hilarious. And the bus pulls up and we don't realise we're on Cock Lane, and they say, you know, look out of the right hand side of the bus, and he's just lying in the street on, like, propped up with the microphone talking about Cock Lane. And it was just this ridiculous sight that we were crying laughing, and I screen grabbed your story and sent it to her and said, oh my goodness, this has reminded me of that bus tour that we did. And it must have been about, oh, I don't know, 10 years ago, 9 years ago.
Amazing. That sounds great.
So thank you for your service.
No worries.
Okay, where are we for your next habit?
Yes, so number four. So my other feel-good habit, and this is again something I talk a lot about on social media, but is self-development and spirituality. Mm-hmm. For me, there is a dark side to this, because I think in the past I've always been really into self-help and stuff like that. It's just always been a part of my life, because my dad actually is really into stuff like that. So I always remember driving in the car with him, and he used to listen to like Tony Robbins tapes, like set tapes, really old school. So I've always been in that. And you know, Oprah, this is great, my dad would always subscribe to Oprah magazine and stuff, so I've always had that sort of language in my house, I guess. But for me, it became dark, where I think I was always looking to fix myself, because I thought I was broken. I was like, why can't I organize myself? What's wrong with me? Why am I so stupid? Why can't I organize myself? Why can't I do this really basic thing? And obviously I know what that is now, but yeah, I definitely used it to berate myself, which I think a lot of people can do. And it's very easy to slip into that mindset. You know, regardless of whether you've got ADHD or not, it's really easy to use that to just make yourself feel rubbish. And that's not what it's about, I don't think. For me, and I don't think it should be for anyone. It shouldn't make you feel rubbish. And you know, self-development and spirituality and whatever way that you engage with those things is really just about connecting back to yourself, I think, and working out what you need, because chances are you probably have the answers, and it's just that we don't get the time to sit and think and work those things out for ourselves. So yeah, that's a really big part of my life, actually, a very, very big part. So as I said, you know, I journal in the morning, and that is really great for me. I do a lot of sort of self-hypnosis stuff, which I'm really interested in that area.
Did you listen to, or I just had a guy on the podcast called Andrew Parr, and it was fascinating. And he uses hypnotherapy, psychotherapy, hypnosis, coaching and counseling, exactly as you were saying. It's not that there's anything wrong with you, it's already there, everything you need. You just sometimes need to dig down beneath some of these barriers you put up to protect yourself in order to find the answers. But you don't need to, that's one thing, you don't need to outsource, it's actually all within you.
Yeah, definitely. Hypnosis is really brilliant, actually, because it is accessing those subconscious things that trip us up, and we sometimes don't know how they link to our behaviors, and being able to sort of work those out for yourself. And sometimes you do need some help doing that, and that's, you know, awesome. But being able to work those things out, I think, is really crucial to working out, you know, why you feel a certain way or etc. So yeah, I do that in the morning. So I have a little journaling session. I do meditation as well. And I think with meditation as well, we're sort of told that there is this one way to do it, you know, download the Calm app or get Headspace or blah, blah, blah. You've got to find what works for you. They do not work for me. Somebody talking at me does not work for me. Mm-hmm. So for me, Vedic meditation, which is a mantra-based meditation, which I did through the London Meditation Center, I think, it's really, really brilliant. It's 20 minutes. It's meant to be twice a day. I do it once a day. And that's really great. It's really quiet and calming, and it just sort of centers me, and I definitely notice a real difference if I don't do it. It's just my whole day is just a little bit more chaotic if I don't do it. And I react to things better if I do it. So that's a big thing. So finding those things that really work for you. And, there's some great people you can follow online that talk about these things as well. And finding the right people that really resonate with you, I would sort of suggest, because I know there's a lot of people in wellness and self-help and all of those things, it's really tempting to just go for the super, the ones that Instagram is promoting, basically. But just find the people that really resonate with you. Find the people that maybe come from, you sort of see yourself in some ways, I think can be really helpful. I think particularly in terms of diversity, if it can be really hard to sometimes relate to someone who doesn't necessarily have your experience. So finding people that you really relate to, I think is really good. Just finding out what works for you. And that might be, it could be anything. So for me, I also practice witchcraft, which is something I do talk about sometimes as well. And I've made that my own as well. I don't follow, this set thing. I bring in sort of elements of, Hinduism as well within that. And I sort of create my own routine, and that is great. But it is just about making it your own and not feeling like you have to do this one thing because this is what everyone else is doing.
AB, I'm going to need to ask you, what the hell is witchcraft? seriously, because my reference point that I'm coming into this conversation with is the craft.
Of course. Yeah. So I think that's where a lot of people probably in their teenage years dabbled in witchcraft and that sort of thing. And I guess in a very simple way, witchcraft is just, it is about connection and connecting to yourself, connecting to nature. There is Wicca, which is a religion, which is different. So I'm not Wicca, but I do practice witchcraft.
So that's what Willow is in Buffy. Again, you see the reference points I'm using?
I'm here for it.
Please educate me and my most excellent listeners.
But witchcraft is different, and there are different forms of it, that it comes from different cultures. So I guess how I identify is as an eclectic witch. So I take different elements that really resonate with me, and that means anything. So there are spells and that sort of thing that I do. But they're very much just really intentional rituals that sort of connect back to yourself. And connect back to the seasons. So this is one of my favorite areas of the witchcraft I practice is plant magic, where you do use plants in a really healing way, and you can use them to create amazing teas and that sort of thing. You've got to know what you're doing, etc. But it is just really connecting back to yourself. And I guess within that, there are elements of the sort of esoteric world that I'm very into. I do read tarot. I don't do that for other people, but I do it for me, etc. And I'm very into astrology and all of that sort of stuff that I guess people would consider woo. I actually don't consider it super woo, because it is, the elements of that are a part of my culture, actually. Astrology and that sort of spiritual side is definitely a big part of the Hinduism that I grew up with. So I don't really consider it woo, but all of those things help me connect back to myself and help me feel grounded and feel really healing and calming. And it is just about finding out what works for you.
Yeah. But okay. So for someone who's listening to this and they think witchcraft and they think spells and they think making people fall in love with you, or I don't know, controlling the tides, it's none of that.
It's none of that. No, you can't, you've got no control over other people, which is, that's what life is.
That's
like
life.
Yeah, you don't have any control over other people. You've got control over what you do. You there are certain things that you can potentially use, crystals and stuff like that. I'm not super into crystals, if I'm honest, but it is just being really intentional and just making sure that you know what you want and why you want it, and just to helping that, I guess, manifest in a way. It is quite complicated to explain because it's so vast, but it is really just about looking inwards and connecting to the seasons, connecting to nature, and just using your own power as a source of guidance.
So it's understanding that you are, it's attaching worth to the things that you want and you feel. So it's a positive practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing about witchcraft as well, in the way that I practice it, is that I do have, I guess you would call it a coven, and that is the WhatsApp group name. It is a community as well. And it's really special. Obviously before the pandemic, we'd all have a couple of bottles of wine, and you know, we would do our rituals and we'd do them all together, and having people, you know, help you, and having that sort of community is really, really powerful. And also having people want those things for you and wish the best for you is really lovely. So there is there can be a community element as well, which I think is really special. But you know, everyone who practices witchcraft does it completely differently. So yeah, it's a big topic.
No, I really appreciate you actually talking about it, because I think it would be very easy to dismiss it. But from the way that you're describing it, it's actually quite an empowering practice, which I'm all for.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And you know, it doesn't have to be super elaborate. You know, there are bar spells, or there are small things that you can do that actually just have an element of sort of ritual to them, that are really, I guess, magical in a way. And yeah, it's something I do. Not for everyone, but that's totally cool.
Okay, now let's lead us into habit number five, my friend.
Yeah, habit number five. So this might sound a little bit shallow, but no more shallow than my Real Housewives earlier.
Do not come for the Real Housewives, AB.
We need to talk about people. Salt Lake City. We need to talk about Salt Lake City at some point. Maybe that is another conversation.
That's an offline conversation. Yeah,
yeah, sure. Absolutely. So for me, one of my feel good habits is making sure that I am surrounded by or indulging in beauty. Obviously, beauty journalist, that's a big part of my life, but also luxury. So I think being able to identify areas that give you a lot of joy is really special. And I think we all need to do that. And I've obviously mentioned that earlier a little bit with, you know, finding, like, carving out space for you to do the things that you enjoy. But for me, it's about making sure that these areas, and there are a couple of others I've got as well, but beauty and luxury are two of the biggest ones, that making sure that those areas run throughout as much of my life as I can, and that I hit them every day. So beauty for me, you know, that's not just putting makeup on every day. That's not just, you know, doing my morning facial routine or whatever it happens to be. That's actually everything from making sure I go out into nature, or making sure that I am just hitting, or it could even be, you know, making sure that I tidy my desk so that it looks beautiful, so that it really pleases me aesthetically. Does sound shallow, but actually these small things, if they mean something to us, you know, if they're important to us, that is such a sense of joy. So actually one of my feel good habits is to make sure that I bring an aspect of beauty into my life. And, you know, there is beauty in so much. As I said, there is beauty in nature. There's beauty in conversations. There is beauty in connection. And bringing that into your life, if it is important to you, is, I think, really valuable. So then luxury, my other one, which also sounds like I am super bougie. I am a little bit, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, luxury comes from, like, having time and having space. Luxury comes from cooking. A meal is luxurious, and having the time and, like, putting, you know, I know people say this all the time, but, you know, putting out a place setting is luxurious. It's all of those kinds of things. Or, like, a really big thing for me is I love interiors, and I mean it's a mess at the moment, as Emma can see, but I've got quite a strong aesthetic as well. So actually for me, doing Pinterest boards is one of my favorite things in the entire world. And I will say, I do think Pinterest is very underused. I think we should all be on Pinterest, because it's so joyful and you can get so much visual inspiration. It just hits that beauty and luxury and inspired and creativity thing for me, in a much healthier way, I think, than Instagram, because there is
absolutely,
you know, oh, their life is better than mine on Instagram, and you know, I think it can make us quite compare-y, Instagram, but Pinterest is just a source of joy. I should probably do their PR. I love Pinterest.
Pinterest is, I remember doing some work with Pinterest a little while ago, and they were very adamant. They were very clear. It is not a social media platform. It's not social networking. It is a visual search engine.
Yeah.
That you, and it's like when you screen grab a picture of something that you like and you keep it in your camera roll. Or when Bryony Blake came on here, she said, create an album that's just pictures that you love. That's essentially Pinterest.
Yeah. Absolutely. It is just a great place to put stuff you love. And when they sort of suggest things that you might like as well, that's really brilliant. And you find new things. And I'm so here for Pinterest. I think it's awesome. That's a really big thing. And I guess, yeah, it hits all of that for me, where I am getting that hit of beauty and luxury and of sort of visual stimuli. It's quite hard to sort of put a term to quantify that feel good habit, but I think it is just working out. Maybe it's like three or four things that, you know, you really love. And it could be, one could be nature, one could be, I don't know, community or connection or whatever it happens to be, but just working out what those things are that are really important to you. And yeah, just indulging in them, I think, is really crucial.
They're lovely. What brilliant habits, Anita.
Yeah, they're quite, I feel like they're a bit airy-fairy.
Well, no, they're not actually, because they're grounded in good sense. I mean, you threw me a curveball with witchcraft, but I think I get it a bit more now.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a curveball, and I think it's really misunderstood. But, you know, as I said, it's not for everyone. If, you know, if that doesn't work for you, maybe it is the Calm app. That is awesome. You know, I actually really like Insight Timer as a meditation tool. I think that's really, really good.
I need to listen to the sleep story that Harry Styles did.
Oh, yes.
On Calm. I think that might be quite helpful for me.
Yeah, that's a great way to go to sleep.
Yeah, Harry Styles talking to you. Anyway, these have been genuinely really wonderful, and I've also really loved your explanation of them, but I really, really appreciate you being open right at the top of the show about your ADHD diagnosis, because I know that that's still relatively new. It's something you're figuring out, but as you said, it's something that actually quite a lot of people, particularly in our age category, are finding out that they've been dealing with their whole lives, but they're finding out in their late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah, I think that is going to be increasingly a thing. I think personally, I just think a lot of people, it's harder to diagnose ADHD in women, like it is with Asperger's and autism and et cetera as well. And because women, just girls and women, present slightly differently. So I think there is going to be a real generation of people who have been, I guess, not diagnosed. And also I think lockdown really showed people, when you have to work from home without the structure of being in an office, yeah. I think that's where a lot of people came unstuck and were like, oh my God, why can't I do anything? Or like, you know, why am I struggling with this? And I think that was a big catalyst as well. So yeah, it's definitely going to be a conversation, I think, that's going to be heard a lot more.
Now, you used two words at the top of the show when you were talking about ADHD that you would use to describe yourself. I shan't repeat them, but there's a third that you didn't mention, but you've said it to me privately before, and it is the name of your book. So do you want to tell listeners about your book?
Yes, that is my other word. Yeah. So my other word is ugly, which is a big word, a big, loaded, very complex word. And yeah, it is the name of my book, which is coming out next May. You can pre-order it. And I need to get a little bit better at this spiel, because I'm in the middle of writing it. So there is so much like going around my head. But basically, Ugly is part memoir. It talks about my experiences growing up as a plus size woman of colour in South Wales. But it also looks at different areas within the idea of ugly that, you know, we sort of, that really make us miserable. And that, you know, that's everything to, you know, our bodies, to our skin tone, to literally, there are just so many areas that we have these ideas, these sort of societal constructs of what, you know, is beautiful and what is ugly. And if we don't, you know, sit within that, or, you know, wherever we sit within that, it can make us feel awful, and it can shadow every aspect of our lives, from our how we work to our self-esteem to our relationships to literally everything. So Ugly, this is my book. I was gonna say this book, but I really need to own it, my book. It looks at the historical, the sort of scientific, the psychological aspects, and the cultural aspects as well, because pop culture really defines things for us, I think. Mm. And it looks at all of those aspects, and sort of, I guess it is almost a self-help book in a way, where it just goes, look, this is not your fault that you feel this way. This is how this myth has been created. This is how, you know, this idea of what is beautiful and what isn't has been created. And you shouldn't feel shit about yourself anymore. Is this sort of the way that that's the way I'm selling the book today. But it's quite an in-depth sort of like geeky read as well. So there's some great facts in there that will probably shock you, and a very good sort of dinner table conversation as well.
Oh, interesting. I can't wait to read it. And I remember, and I'm trying to remember how many years ago it was, but do you remember when we met in a cafe just off Tottenham Court Road and you told me about it. I was like, for goodness sake, write it.
Yes. Yeah, that is always, yeah, that is always Emma's advice to me. Just do it. But I can't because I have to agonize over it and perfectionize it. And that's not a word, but you know what I mean? Yeah.
Perfectionize it. I think you should trademark. That can be the next book. Perfectionize.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe I should coin that to trademark it.
I reckon if Paris Hilton can trademark That's Hot, then you can do perfectionize.
Definitely.
It's a hashtag if nothing else. Anita, these have been really wonderful and I really appreciate your generosity. Listeners, the links to Anita, to the many things that she has mentioned, because she's going to email me those links, are going to be in the show notes. And the link to pre-order Ugly by Anita Bhagwandas will be in the show notes. But for now, thank you so much for returning and joining me and sharing your feel-good habits.
No worries. Thank you everyone for listening as well.